Before we begin this podcast, I'd like to tell you about a special deal. Subscribe today to The Spectator for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with, here's the magic bit, a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. It is 2025 and Donald Trump is president once again of the United States. We will, of course, be following the moves of the Donald and his second administration very closely. However, it won't just be politics for us this year. We'll also talk a lot and cover American culture, life, and the arts. I should also remind you, because my producer Natasha will not let me hear the end of it, that we are on Spectator TV. So head to our YouTube channel to watch that. Hello and welcome to the Americano Show. Today we're going to be talking about Trump's tariffs and Great Britain. And to talk about this, I'm delighted to be joined by Angus Hanton, who is an entrepreneur and author of the book Vassal State, How America Runs Britain, which I would say is essential reading if you want to understand the economic relationship between Britain and America. Angus, there's sort of quite a lot of relief in British circles that Trump seems to be, for now, this could have all changed by the time this podcast comes out, you never know with Trump world, but Trump seems to be not considering Britain as a prime target for his tariffs. And he will be applying tariffs on the European Union, on steel and aluminium, quite large, 25% tariffs, very significant. But Britain, for now, appears to escape. Should we be relieved?
I don't think so. I think this is very early counting of chickens.
Yeah.
We're well under a month into Trump's presidency, and it's quite clear that he's changing the relationship between Britain and America so that instead of being a partnership with a senior and a junior partner, it's much more now a master-servant relationship. And that's what my book Vassal State illustrates, in both in terms of politics but also in terms of the economic realities that America owns so much, American corporations own so much of Britain. But in terms of our hopes for how we might be treated in this master-servant relationship in terms of tariffs, I think we have some reasons for optimism. First of all, we don't have a big trade surplus, in fact, any trade surplus at all with the US. And the US, Trump is really targeting those who have a surplus with him, with the US. So those are China, Canada, Mexico, and the EU. So in that sense, we should be out of the firing line, but I think we'll probably be caught in the crossfire. Tariffs, 25% tariffs on steel will affect British companies.
Well, and given from your book, you get the strong sense of how well America does out of Britain. I mean, in some senses, we should be having more of a protectionist attitude towards the US economy. Would you argue that?
Absolutely. I mean, America has had a Buy America policy. I mean, it's had it for many years. Effectively, the Europeans have a Buy European or Buy France, Buy Germany policy. And we've decided not to do that. And our open economy has meant that we've said everything's for sale. It's somewhat like a jumble sale. And there's still some stuff left on the shelves, not a vast amount. And one illustration of that was this week's news that Elliott, a New York-based company, is rattling the cage of British Petroleum, of BP, and there may well be an American takeover of one of the few British large companies.
Yeah. I had you on this podcast last year with William Clouston, the leader of the Social Democratic Party. And you were both saying pretty much there's no family silver left in Britain. British Petroleum, arguably, but in terms of steel production, in terms of manufacturing industry, Britain doesn't really have an economy in that sense.
No, absolutely. We've sold so much of it. But I think what's not understood widely is that we've sold so much of it to the Americans. If you go into the street and ask the average person which country they think has done more takeovers, they'll say, well, probably China. But actually, the US has taken over and owns 10 times as much of the UK economy. America owns 10 times as much as China does. So people just don't really understand the numbers. And it's partly because organisations like Boots, which are US-owned, and Cisco, and many of the defence companies, formerly Morrisons, and Manchester United, Chelsea, all these companies are owned by Americans. And people just don't realise the extent of American ownership. But I think what Trump does is he lays that bare, and he's saying quite brutally he's going to start using the power that the American corporations have. But it is true that tariffs on the UK may make US companies suffer as well. Mm. So to the extent that Britain represents a very big investment for America, it may want to protect its investment. I mean, of all America's overseas investments, 30% of them are in the UK. It's a huge proportion.
Mm. Well, I remember the writer Andy Bacevich said to me once that Trump, he's not a fan of Trump, but he said, Donald Trump, the good thing about Donald Trump is he exposes all the smelly little hypocrisies of the way power works. And in some ways, that's what he will be doing to tariffs, with Britain in particular. He's much more clear and upfront about the nature of the relationship. America is the metropole and we are the outpost. And for a long time, we've just been in denial about this.
Well, I think it's much worse than us being the outpost. I think we're much more subservient than people realise. And it's not just a static relationship. It's one in which the American corporations are increasingly taking over the UK. I mean, today we've seen an announcement by the British that they're going to join the Americans in not signing the artificial intelligence accord that the Europeans wanted. Mm. And therefore, we're saying, we're going with the Americans. We're allowing the Americans increasingly to take over new sectors. Mm. And we see that at the moment with AI. It's already dominated by US corporations.
Yes. And it's been Peter Mandelson started as ambassador in Washington yesterday. I think he's formally begun now his ambassadorship. And there's a lot of gossip about him because he is very much this pro-EU figure, links to China and so on. And there was a big push on the right in America and in Britain to try and get him stopped from being ambassador. But I think a lot of people in Trump world and people in the Labour Party think he might be just the sort of figure that can kind of coax a good relationship for Britain out of the US.
One hopes so, but there's only so much you can do in terms of a sort of social relationship or a diplomatic relationship. Mm. The underlying facts are that in economic terms, we're dominated by the US and they're continuing with the new technologies to become the dominant player in most market sectors.
And that's not something politics can change, really, or is it?
It absolutely can. I mean, the politicians, if they wanted to, they could have a buy British policy. They could protect against takeovers. They could do something very simple. They could start to measure the extent of US ownership. And I had to dig quite deep to find the numbers. There's no department, no part of government, which is trying to say, let's work out how much of British economy is owned by Americans. So there's a lot they could do. If they wanted to, but I don't think they want to. I think when we talk of Atlanticist leaders, including Keir Starmer, we're talking about leaders who very much want to play to what the Americans want, and of course that applies to reform. Nigel Farage is very close to the Trump leadership, and it applies to the Conservative Party.
Well, and certainly on the right, there seems to be this understanding that you either sell out to China and get as much money in from China as you can, or you sell out to America. And I suppose a lot of people like me would prefer to sell out. If you're going to have to sell out to one, you'd prefer to sell out to America rather than, in Beijing.
But Freddie, that's the big if you have to sell out, and if you have to sell out to one of the big power blocks. I mean, the three big power blocks are surely America, China and Europe. Yeah. Europe's 20 miles away. America's 2,000 miles away. We've got so much more that we should have in common with Europe. And and indeed, we have got it in common with Europe. So I wouldn't sell out to anyone, but if I were going to align myself, I would align myself with with the EU. But you don't have to do that at the expense of having a good relationship with America. I mean, after all, the United States. I mean, after all, France and Germany are still under the NATO umbrella. Mm. They can protect their industries without having to go Chinese.
Well, this presumably is what Labour are thinking. There's going to be a big reset with Europe, a kind of a realignment with the European Union. It won't be a Remain policy. It won't be a re-entry into the European Union, but it'll be something as close as we can get to it while being outside.
Well, they'll do that with one arm held behind their back by the Americans, saying, you just do what we want. And today's announcement about the Artificial Intelligence Accord is one demonstration of that.
Mm. And on tech, America is the metropole. It is the superpower. And it's very hard for non-American countries to compete. Therefore, we are always going to be dominated by America because America is the alpha and omega when it comes to technology.
Well, that's right. When we refer to big tech, we should really be saying big US tech.
Yes.
But we don't have to be like that. I mean, the British owned DeepMind. They didn't have to let it be sold to Google. And there are European companies. Spotify is a Swedish company. Mm. There are technology companies. But the way we've allowed it to develop is when there's a successful UK tech company, it gets bought out and we allow it to be bought out by the big tech US tech companies. Mm. And one of the things that Trump is doing is using his political and economic power to help the big tech companies. So they're already paying at maximum 15% tax, and actually I think they're paying less than that, whereas UK companies pay 25% tax. Mm. But it's been suggested this in the last week that as part of a trade deal, the digital services tax, in other words, the tech tax on tech companies, would be dropped completely. Mm. So I think this power that we're speaking of is being exercised to help big tech.
Well, we saw in Britain with the debate over the Online Safety Act that any attempt of the government to kind of control the power of technology meets fierce resistance and ends up losing, possibly because these tech companies are so powerful. And indeed, the American stock market, to some extent, is big tech now. It is, all the bets are on technology, AI, NVIDIA, and so on. These are all huge tech bets that are driving the American economy forward.
Absolutely. I mean, the trillion-dollar companies are almost all tech companies, and they're almost all American, and they're dominated by sort of the big five or six, Amazon, Apple, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and of course now NVIDIA. Mm. They've got a terrific amount of power that reaches right into our lives, into our phones, and into our politics, so that Twitter is described, or X is described, as the town square. But it's basically a town square that dominates British politics, but is controlled from California. Yeah. And that's also true, as you say, of standards in relation to security and privacy, and how much what Facebook and Instagram and the online platforms are allowed to do. It's controlled from California and not, as it should be, from Westminster.
And tech is now money. Tech is, through the digitization of money, tech is now money. And there's a fascinating bit in your book about how the sort of wiring of the economy, the payments wiring of the economy, is now channeled through America now. Can you explain a bit about how that works?
Absolutely. I mean, the death of cash was something that was accelerated by COVID, but it's now quite relatively unusual to use cash. Mm. And so we're using cards. But those cards are American. So Visa and MasterCard, Google Pay, Apple Pay, Amex, these are all US payment systems, so that it means that almost every transaction that we make involves a royalty payment to an American corporation. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about payments. I mean, that's certainly true, but it's also other transactions that go through platforms. So if we book an Airbnb or if we sell something secondhand, we'll be using a eBay and we'll be using an American platform. Mm. So there's a friction on the whole economy that whenever a transaction is made, either both through payments and through platforms, the Americans are taking a royalty from trade, where it's one British person dealing with another British person, but a little bit's taken every time by US corporations.
And indeed, the sort of vestiges of the cash economy are actually controlled by America too, because they control the cash points now.
Absolutely. Once you've got a control of the... it's been put very well by by a former chief of Visa Corporation, American. He said, we want to be involved in every transaction. So whether it's cash or more likely a card payment or even a debit card payment, they want to be involved, and they've made sure that they're critical to the way the financial system works.
Going back to Trump, there is sort of optimism in some parts of the right that Britain can use its status outside the European Union, but close to the European Union, to become a kind of very important middleman between America and Europe and America and the rest of the world. I mean, we are to some extent already. But do you think that's blue sky thinking that ignores the fundamental realities of the US takeover of the British economy?
I think the Americans are quite happy for their servant to put on the uniform of a butler and to be an introducer and a peacemaker. But it doesn't change the fundamental reality that the typical British household is paying into US corporations' profits £2,000 a year. And that's a transfer every year from British households to American corporations, and it tends to get bigger each year.
Well, again, on this idea that Donald Trump sort of clarifies things, he's now talking more in imperial terms about controlling the Western Hemisphere more, Canada, Panama, Mexico, exerting America's influence in a more traditional power way, almost a revisionist way. Some people in his circle, Elon Musk, seems to be very interested in Britain. I mean, perhaps we are just going to be absorbed into the American system of government over the next 50 to 100 years.
Well, that 50 to 100 years is looking a long way ahead, but in the next 4 years, it certainly looks as if America is going to take much more interest in British politics. And this is breaking a really strong convention not to interfere in each other's domestic politics. Mm. And Musk has broken that very fully, and it seems to me that Trump has done so when he rather patronisingly said that Keir Starmer is doing a good job so far.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems to me this sort of comment it has traditionally not been made. There's been supportive comments, but not this kind of judgmental comment with the implicit threat that if he doesn't do a good job, Trump will interfere.
Well, the Brexiteer counterpoint to that would be that Barack Obama famously said, if you leave the European Union, you'll be joining the back of the queue. And that triggered an angry response on the right in Britain, didn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Well, that is the risk that we're... Mm. And I mean, we haven't had a trade deal for several years now, and the British government, successive British governments, have been very keen to have a trade deal, and the Americans hold that over us, in order to get what they want in terms of regulation and in other respect. So, yeah, we are at the back of the queue, but I'm afraid we've put ourselves there.
If Britain were to try to develop some kind of protectionist policies to protect our big companies, one law you mentioned in France is the so-called Danone law, which was introduced, I think, to stop a US private equity takeover of Danone, which is a huge French company.
It was to stop PepsiCo taking over the milk and yogurt company.
Exactly. I mean, you would like to see something like that in Britain, but again, what's really left?
Well, what the French did was with the Danone law was they said that Danone is a national strategic company, and it's important that it's French owned. And in a way, they were right, because the company supports small communities by buying milk from small farmers. And it doesn't have a policy of raw profit maximisation. It has stakeholders, and it's concerned about its employees and its communities. So I think, yes, we've fundamentally, British companies have somewhat different values than American companies. American companies have been all about profit maximisation at all costs. Mm. And I think British and European companies have a different culture, a belief that, yes, profit is important, and they are interested in making money, but employees are important, and customers are important, and communities are important, and the long term is important. So I think there's a culture clash in business. Mm. And I think if we go the American way, we're accepting the private equity willingness to sack anyone who's not making a profit, even in the short term, and to gear up with borrowing and to just maximise financial returns to the financial engineers.
Is this what the British Chancellor Rachel Reeves would call securonomics? You would go along with that? You think there is a an economic vision for Britain that could be more stable, long-term, social democratic in the future?
Absolutely, absolutely. If we boil it down just to making money, then a lot of people will lose their jobs needlessly. Mm. But in terms of Rachel Reeves's approach, I'm very disappointed in her not being more interested in British business. So that when she announced a great success in getting investment in the UK, it was very much investment by big tech companies and not investment by British companies themselves.
Yeah. I take that point, but is it not just the reality of the financial waters that we're all swimming in, that now big tech is everything?
Well, there are lots of different ways to deal with that. It would be reasonable for the government to say that they want to charge the same tax on big tech's profits as they charge on UK companies' profits. Mm. And it would be reasonable for them to say we want to have much more say in regulation about what information, how the platforms work.
And do you think that should be applied to services as much as manufacturing? I mean, we are a service-based economy, really, aren't we? And that's where America is so strong, if you look at the city, finance and so on.
Well, they're also strong in manufacturing. I mean, many people who are getting their Wi-Fi sorted out are using Starlink from Elon Musk's company. And there's a lot of manufacturing in the US. I mean, people just forget how big the US is. Mm. I mean, in terms of the total GDP, there's something like 29 trillion, and the whole of the whole of Europe is something like 20 trillion. Mm. So they're about 50% more than the whole of Europe. So they're big, and that's services and goods.
And the US economy is, I take your point that it's just always been about profit maximization, and you don't have the same culture in Europe and Britain, perhaps. But it's primed for growth, and it does do that. It grows. Britain, growth is this sort of unicorn that we seem to be chasing and unable to find. Don't we need a bit more of the American attitude to growth?
I think we've got a lot to learn from the Americans, of course, that they run businesses very well. And we should do a lot more of the things that they do. And yes, we do try to learn from them. Mm. But that doesn't mean we have to swallow their philosophy hook, line and sinker. We can be much more like the Americans or the Germans or the French in saying, yep, we've got to learn, a bit like after the Second World War with Le Défi Américain, the American challenge that was written by Jean-Jacques Sermon-Schreiber. And he argued that the French needed to learn American business methods. Mm. And they did so, and very successfully. So we can learn American business methods without selling out to them.
Yes. Has it been about a year since Vassal State came out?
Vassal State came out last April.
Last April, and coming up to a year.
Yes.
And in that time, do you think we've moved it more into vassalage, or are we seeing a way out?
I'm afraid we've moved more into vassalage, particularly the disappointment of the new Labour government not being at all concerned about any economic nationalism. And secondly, Donald Trump being so keen to push American advantage into American dominance.
Angus Hampton, thank you very much for coming on to Spectator TV.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to that episode of Americano. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave a review on whatever platform you are watching or listening into it on. We prefer positive reviews, although some constructive criticism is also welcome. I'd also urge you to sign up to the Americano newsletter, which I write every week, comes out on Thursdays, and people seem to be enjoying it so far. Thank you very much to the audience. Thanks also to my producer, Natasha Feroz, for doing such a wonderful job. And speak to you next time.